The European Union unveils how it plans to finance its massive pandemic recovery plan. Live from London, this is the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Victoria Craig. Good morning. Nearly $1 trillion. That's how much the EU is aiming to raise over the next 5 years through new debt offerings or bonds to fund its coronavirus recovery plan. The 27-nation bloc says it will repay the loans by 2058 with the overall goal to build a greener, more digital, and more resilient future. The BBC's Andrew Walker has more on that.
The borrowing exercise contributes to a wider program which is intended to support extensive investment in the EU member states in the transition to a low-carbon and digital economy. It will offer a mixture of grants and loans to the member states. The EU, in common with the United States, is seeking to combine the desire for a large program to boost the economic recovery from the pandemic with a longer-term transition to tackle climate change and exploit the opportunities created by new technology. In London, I'm the BBC's Andrew Walker for Marketplace.
Checking the numbers now, global benchmarks are little changed this morning, though shares of luxury retailer LVMH are up more than 3% in Paris after first quarter sales rebounded more than expected. Toshiba shares, meanwhile, rallied 6% in Tokyo after that company's boss resigned over a controversial buyout offer from his former employer, private equity firm CVC Capital. Well, so far this year, India's Serum Institute has supplied 28 million coronavirus vaccine doses to COVAX. That's the WHO-backed vaccine sharing program. It's also donated supplies to its neighbors in Southeast Asia, but now the country says it needs to focus on itself. In the last 24 hours, India has seen its biggest increase in coronavirus cases since the pandemic began. Vaccine export restrictions have been put in place, and the government is giving fast-track approval to shots made by Pfizer and Moderna that have already been cleared for use in the U.S., U.K., EU, and Japan. As the crisis worsens, the BBC's Nikhila Namdar explains why the nation now needs to rely on vaccine imports rather than its own domestic production.
Right now, we have tie-ups with the Oxford AstraZeneca, tie-up with the Serum Institute of India. There's yet another company called Biologicals E, which has a tie-up to a manufacturer, the Johnson & Johnson vaccine. That's, you know, under trial. What this essentially does is any vaccine that has an approval from bodies like the US FDA or the WHO will now be given direct emergency use approval. It means that these candidates will not need to undergo clinical trials here in the country, and they can be administered following what's called a bridging trial after only about 100 patients are monitored over a period of a week in order to quickly expand the basket of vaccines that India has available following a massive surge in infections that we've seen.
Given the pause yesterday in Johnson & Johnson's vaccine rollout here in Europe, in the U.S., in South Africa, as well as questions about AstraZeneca's side effects, does all of that limit how much of other vaccines India can get? In other words, does that just limit the pool that the country has access to?
That is absolutely a big question right now. I mean, you know, given that Johnson & Johnson, the rollout of that has been halted in so many other parts of the world, will it still be eligible for emergency use approval? We haven't yet got a response on that from the government. There are several other questions. Do these makers really have enough stocks to export? India was seen as a pharmacy of the world, exporting to the world, then banned those exports. And now it's actually asking other countries to export into India. Is there enough stock given vaccine nationalism and the hoarding that we've seen in other parts of the world?
And are there answers to any of those questions, or it's just something that Indian authorities are just sort of hoping they can address as you go?
One expert that I spoke to actually said that what the government has done is not an overnight solution, because it's going to take at least a couple of months before India can get any of these vaccines into the country. Until now, India's immunization program has been solely run and funded by the government. But once these vaccines, if and when they do come in, would they be allowed into the private market, or would it be the government who would buy it? At this point in time, really, there's not much clarity that we have.
Lots of questions still remain. The BBC's Nikhila Namdar for us in Mumbai. Thanks so much for your time.
Thanks, Victoria.
The Ever Given is stuck again, this time not in the Suez Canal, but in custody of an Egyptian court. From Cairo, the BBC's Sally Nabil has more.
Egypt is demanding compensation of nearly $1 billion to cover the losses that resulted from the blockage of the strategic waterway. Nearly 12% of global trade passes through it. A statement from one of the Ever Given's insurers said the vessel's owners were disappointed that Suez Canal authorities decided to arrest the ship. They say they have already made a generous offer to settle their claim, but a court order has been issued to hold the massive container ship, and for now the giant Ever Given won't be able to leave Egypt until a financial settlement is reached. In remarks to local media, the Canal Authority chief said that the canal itself is not to blame for all what happened. In Cairo, I'm the BBC's Sally Nabil for Marketplace.
To the Netherlands now, where the government is running pilot programs to determine how people can mingle safely once lockdown restrictions are eventually eased. This week, it sent 200 vacation goers to a Greek island for 8 days with caveats. One of them, they can't leave their resort, not even for the beach. In the city of Utrecht today, cafes, bars and restaurants are participating in an experiment to study how people interact with each other. The BBC's Anna Holligan is at one and she explains how the experiment will work.
They'll be studying things like the distance they keep, the duration of time they spend with each other, and who they're mixing with. So whether or not people stick to their own groups of friends, whether they start mingling with strangers. Everyone who has an appointment has to show a negative test in order to get inside. Everyone has to wear a motion sensor too, bearing in mind that we have been in isolation for months. So this is all designed to work out whether or not these cafes, bars and restaurants can reopen again.
They'll have the results in about 4 weeks. What happens then? Will they use that data to try and figure out what the new guidelines should be once lockdown ends?
Precisely. And this is really controversial and divisive, actually. The Netherlands has turned into something of a nation of guinea pigs because they're conducting studies in a holiday resort in Rhodes at the moment. They've held music festivals, football matches. And what they believe the value of this is to work out how these events can go ahead in a safe way, because there's pressure from society, pressure from the entrepreneurs who run these places to allow the catering industry to reopen.
And as you say, Anna, this is all happening in the midst of a national lockdown. Hospitals are worried about overcapacity with COVID patients. This initiative that you're talking about is supported by the Economy Ministry, but some argue that time and money should maybe be spent on vaccine rollouts and things focused more in that vein.
Exactly. That's a very, very strong argument here, because the Netherlands was the slowest country in Europe to start rolling out its vaccination program. Still, only approximately 3 million people have received their first dose. And there are a lot of people who argue actually this money would be better spent in speeding that up a bit, because ultimately, the more people who are vaccinated, the more wider society can start to return to some form of normality again, rather than having these kind of sporadic one-off studies. There is another argument too. If you allow cafes and terraces to reopen again, then you stop people attending these mass unregulated gatherings in public parks, underground raves and that kind of thing. So if this can happen in a controlled environment, then they believe it's actually safer.
We'll check back with you in 4 weeks. The BBC's Anna Holligan for us in Utrecht. Thanks so much for your time this morning.
Thank you.
And here in London, I'm Victoria Craig with the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.